This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this latest Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name's Andrew Aldridge. I'm delighted today to be joined by Danny Helson, who is in charge of programme delivery and investor relations at EIE in partnership with Edinburgh University. So Danny, thank you very much for joining us. Great to see you.
You too, Andrew.
So can you tell us a bit about EIE's role within Edinburgh University and what EIE does effectively?
I will try. If I can just go back a little bit in time.
Please, absolutely. We always like to start at the beginning in this podcast.
Okay, so EIE was actually came out of a project called Informatics that was originally part of the School of Informatics at the University of Edinburgh. And we started EIE back in 2008.
Okay.
At that point in time, that the first EIE event happened on the 8th floor of the Appleton Tower,
okay,
which is the 60s tower block in Edinburgh. We had 64 attendees on the day. And we had 16 academic-type projects, stroke spin-out companies.
Right.
And all the investors were able to sit around our boardroom table, albeit a bit cramped.
I was going to say a big boardroom table.
So that was our sort of small beginnings, yep, if you like. The following year, we moved across the road to what is called the Informatics Forum Building in Edinburgh, which is the home of the School of Informatics. And we did EIE there with 30 companies.
Yep.
And then we stayed there for a few years before moving off site to what's called the assembly rooms in Edinburgh. We doubled again there. We went up to 60 companies.
Brilliant.
We went to the conference center and then we brought it back to the university in 2018 to McEwen Hall. At that point, we were still about 60 companies.
Yep.
And we were up to around about 1,000 attendees at the event at McEwen Hall, around 260 investors from all over the place at that point. So we were drawing companies from not only Scotland, but across the UK, Europe, North America, Asia, and even as far as Australia.
It is very impressive to see because I think we started supporting EIE back in 2015, I think it was, and just to see that growth even since then has been phenomenal and just shows kind of what's going on again, not just in Edinburgh and Scotland, but across the wider world. So you have the major event each year. Can you just tell us a bit about the format and kind of the purpose, if you like, and how it works?
Yeah. So it keeps evolving, by the way, Andrew.
It's
changed over the years, like you said, from academic-y type projects to fully fledged businesses. We look at companies, tech companies that are seeking seed to Series A investment.
Okay. Yep.
And I should sort of backpedal a little bit. So a few years ago, Edinburgh City or City Region got one of the government City Region deals. And so the ambition for Edinburgh is that it will become the data center for Europe.
Okay.
So within that data-driven initiative, we kind of aligned ourselves with that. And the initiative there will have five hubs within the Edinburgh City Region deal.
Okay.
The first of those hubs is the Bay Center. And that is where EIE moved to about it's come out to 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
His fourth birthday this on Friday, October the 7th.
I hope you get a cake. Yep.
Good. I hope so too. So that was the first of the hubs. There's going to be five hubs within that. There's one out to Easter Bush. Let me just have a quick.
And what does each hub look like? What would you find inside each hub?
Well, some are still being built as we speak.
Sure.
In fact, there was a bit of news recently where the National Robotarium opened up. Part of that, the big chunk of that, is at Heriot-Watt University. Mm-hmm. which is out near the airport in Edinburgh. And the other half, which I believe you saw when you visited us recently.
I did.
Is in the ground floor of the base.
A hugely impressive setup, absolutely.
Yeah, so we have the National Robotarium, the Edinburgh Futures Institute, which will be across the way, is due to be opening next year. And they will be looking at fintech broadly. Then we have the Usher Institute, which is life science, medtech, and stuff. And then...
I like that.
Yes, that didn't sound very good.
No, you're playing it down. It's good. But I think in terms of certainly from a south of the border person such as myself, I adore Edinburgh. It's a fabulous city, and I love coming up there. But you can certainly see the investment that's gone on over the last few years in terms of the universities, in terms of those hubs. Have you seen? You know, it's an impressive infrastructure there that you guys must be very proud of to have and have access to.
Absolutely, it's phenomenal. And sorry, I should just mention the fifth one, which is out at the Bush, which is the ag tech. Veterinary science offerings out there. So
very varied kind of tech sectors that you've got there, which
And I would encourage people to look at the data driven innovation website, and they'll explain it much better than I have just done. So we're trying to encourage a lot more entrepreneurial activity. Yep. I mean, that's what we've been doing since we kicked off, but clearly companies that are looking to grow need access to finance and capital. So since we started in 2008, that's part of what we've been doing, is connecting the company.
So that's the main driver of what you do. It's kind of almost that matchmaking between entrepreneurs and funders.
Yeah, I think matchmaking is probably not quite as curated as one might hope at the moment. But a lot of it is creating the environments where the two halves of the coin can get together and decide whether they like each other enough to go further. And
so you're empowering the connections rather than actually matchmaking and putting them together.
Exactly. Over the years, I'm sure it's the same with DeepBridge. You know, you do get to know some of the investors and some of the companies a bit better. So you might.
It does, and I think what our guys have always enjoyed about EIE in particular is that it's not just necessarily about the investee companies looking for cash. It's a network around that, and it's just helping people understand why DeepBridge or why somebody else in our market, and it's it makes people's lives easier to kind of signpost people to the right funder. Because I think one of the themes that we've discussed regularly with our investee companies is why DeepBridge, and kind of making sure that that people understand that it's not just any cash sometimes for early stage companies. It's making sure it's the right cash and the right people who are going to add the right value and the right kind of expertise to what you're doing. And I think that's been key for us at EIE is really understanding the Scottish market, the Edinburgh market much better, and making sure people understand where DeepBridge fits in and kind of what our skill sets are.
Smart money, as we call it.
Absolutely. But some companies need passive money, or dumb money, as it's often known. But some people don't necessarily need the value add that smart money can bring. But it's just making sure it's the right money for the right people, isn't it? So, kind of this year, you've got EIE again. It's an online event currently. In terms of, I guess that's added its own challenges, and but also maybe has that given you a broader reach of people? Is it easier to get people to an online event from all over the UK or from wider fields as well?
Well, definitely from wider fields, for a lot of people that just are time poor, it gives them the ability to tune in and see the companies that are going on, and then have follow-up discussions with those companies at a later date. So it does provide another layer to engage with people. Although the showcase event is going to be in October this year for Edinburgh, we did do an event down in London in April.
Yep.
We did a showcase event at the London Stock Exchange, which was fantastic to be able to get back to London again after so long, showcase four of our alumni companies.
And I heard that was very well received. You had a good turnout for that and lots of interest.
Yeah, it was excellent, and very grateful to the London Stock Exchange for allowing us to use that facility.
Well, hopefully it's in their interest, because hopefully you know, some of these companies will be the FTSE companies of the future potentially. But you know, that's the way it works.
Well, and in fact, one of the companies that they weren't with us on the day there, but one of the companies that came out of research in Edinburgh many moons ago was acquired by the London Stock Exchange within the past year.
So you kind of talked about kind of EI started, et cetera, and you know, it span out of the informatics department and what have you. What's kind of your key objective now? Is it predominantly around finding that funding, or is it providing additional support, or kind of, yeah, is, you know, what is EIE's kind of raison d'etre, if you like, in 2022?
Yeah, well, I think when we started off, there was very little activity in terms of sort of entrepreneurial support and so on. That was around that time. So we were right at the beginning of the ecosystem there. And we tried to provide entrepreneurship education programs for a lot of the nascent entrepreneurs who just have had no experience of this whatsoever. And clearly in the last decade or so, that's changed quite dramatically, and there's lots of other programs that have come along. So people have a much better understanding of what may be required, and there's lots of support mechanisms out there, whereas it was just us, or nearly just us for a while.
I guess it's showcasing, if I can get my words out, to entrepreneurs the challenges they're going to face. You know, it's all right and good having the good idea, but sometimes that's the first battle that you will have on the route to developing what you've got.
Yeah, when we started this off, Clearly, we had entrepreneurs in Scotland already, and we did draw on our local ones to help us a great deal with this. But clearly, that pool's getting bigger and bigger. I think when we kicked off, the culture almost at the time was that there was a brain drain out of Scotland, that you would go off to London or the West Coast to develop your careers. We're actually seeing a bit of a reversal on that as well now. So people that have been elsewhere are looking to come back or re-engage back in Scotland. So our pool of people that have got experience and or money is getting bigger and bigger. We want to raise the ambitions of the companies that are taking part. And I think sometimes they just need to lift their eyes a bit more and think of global domination a bit sooner.
That's interesting, because I guess, you know, it's that balancing act. You don't want early stage companies to have kind of ideas beyond where you know, might attract funding, because we see pitches all the time where, you know, they're going to take on the world within 3 years, and you've got to sometimes be more realistic about the path to actually achieving what they want to. But I guess making them look up and see the wider world is equally as useful for a number of companies.
Yeah. I mean, there's a group up here called Startup Grind. I mean, they're an international group. They took a group of, I think, 20 young companies out to Silicon Valley earlier in 2022.
Okay.
It's activities that we used to do many years ago ourselves. And there's another organization up here called FutureX that has done similar programs for a number of years as well. And what we find is that when you show the companies what's going on in Silicon Valley, in America more broadly, it does open their eyes, and they get very enthused and say, well, we can do that. Yeah. We're able to do this sort of thing. I think Americans just think in bigger terms straight off the bat.
They do. There is definitely a psychological difference, at investor level. You know, when you think about EIS and SEIS, you know, they don't have schemes like that in the US because they don't need it. You know, people are naturally drawn to supporting innovation and entrepreneurs, etc. So there's less need for it, whereas I guess maybe we're a little bit more reserved in the UK, should we say.
I think it's just different parts, but it's the fact that the talent here is as good, if not better, than a lot of the stuff that gets all the glory out in America.
Yeah, yeah. And look, kind of on that subject, obviously, you mentioned the West Coast. Obviously, the West Coast of America. You didn't mean that there's a brain drain to Ardrossan or somewhere, but, that's... We've done a number of deals up in Scotland. We find there's great infrastructure in Scotland, but why is Scotland and Edinburgh in particular, I guess, a great place to found an early stage innovative company such as a tech company or life sciences?
Yeah. Well, I would say Scotland broadly, because there are excellent places all over Scotland in terms of entrepreneurship and what's going on. I can talk to you about Edinburgh because that's where I'm sitting at the moment, which is great. I think having the support of the City Region Deal activity has really, really been a shot in the arm for us. Mm-hmm. But across Scotland, we have world-class universities.
Yep.
The latest research excellence framework, I can't speak properly, research excellence framework.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
That's from last year. The School of Informatics up here at Edinburgh University is one of the top computer science schools in Europe.
Yep.
So phenomenal expertise and depth on research across world-class universities right across Scotland. The distances are not that terrible for us to travel around. It's easy to get around. So we have fantastic universities. Edinburgh has a lot of money around it. Mm-hmm. The angel networks across Scotland are very sophisticated and do pump up their weight in terms of what goes on across the UK. So access to that early stage money is very achievable. It is a village up here. Everybody kind of knows everybody, so it's very easy to plug into that side of things.
So there's
a phenomenal amount of support available and talent as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was speaking to somebody from another region in the UK, which probably isn't as far down the road as Scotland in particular. And I think the three things that we kind of discussed is that you need in order to create that entrepreneurial hub and that kind of innovation is capital, which you discussed, academia, and a network and support. And I think that's exactly what it sounds like that you've got, you do so well up there.
Yeah, it is, and very collaborative sort of nature. I know as we mature, there's more and more competition creeps in, but it's still a very collaborative kind of environment. And there's a lot of entrepreneurs that have gone through it recently, if I can put it that way, that are supporting the next generation coming through as well.
Absolutely. And entrepreneurship mentors, etc., can be incredibly valuable, particularly for somebody doing it for the first time, to kind of give them that sounding board and that pathway. So you kind of mentioned the different hubs you've got kind of around Edinburgh, etc. What kind of key themes are you seeing or what are kind of areas that you're seeing a lot of interest in at the moment?
Well, we're slightly biased because
there's a big focus
at the Bay Centre on AI and data science.
Yep.
The Bay Centre is actually the University of Edinburgh's innovation hub for AI and data science. School of Mathematics over the road has excellence in AI.
So
we kind of spoil what's right on our doorstep and where we live. So there's a heavy focus on that. But we're seeing lots of interest across areas. The fintech and cybersecurity area, that's growing for us. It's actually transitioning, I would say, a little bit at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of interest in fintech. And the cybersecurity angle is getting louder and louder.
But
AI and data science is a big growth area for us. The other area that we're trying I think we'll take off a bit more soon is the space and satellites sector. In fact, there's a rocket launch in Sutherland before too long.
Okay, brilliant.
That's both upstream and downstream companies that are associated with space and satellites.
And it was when I came to see you a few weeks ago, as you mentioned, it was interesting to see the NASA robotics that's in your building at the moment. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and that new half of it, I can put it that way, that's just opened up at Heriot-Watt University. I mean, it's a phenomenal facility that they've got out there. And that is just going to grow and grow and grow. And the entrepreneurial activities that will happen around that are enormous.
Very good. Can you tell us about some of the organisations that you're working with, whether they be entrepreneurs, partners, or just some of the third parties and people that you're working with?
Within Bayes, if I keep it in house, there's a couple of fairly new programs that have started off. The first one is called Venture Builder, and that is aimed at getting more PhDs to set up businesses. And I used to talk to sort of newly starting PhD students some years ago. And I asked them how many of them might have an interest in entrepreneurial activity? And the answer was usually quite low.
Yeah.
But I have to say there's been a complete change around in that. And so the last calls for cohorts that we've had with that have got very good numbers coming through. And so that does bode well for the future.
Can you put your finger on why that is at all? Or is it a multitude of things? Or is it just a kind of a social kind of change? Or?
I think there's a social change to it. I think a number of years ago, a lot of PhDs had the ambition to have a life in academia.
Yep.
When you tell them the reality is that this is not going to happen,
yep.
Of course, they always think that's going to be someone else, not them. But I do think, culturally, before, if you were an academic and you wanted to do something outside, it meant you stopped publishing papers and then that's the end of the academic. I think the world has changed now, and that's no longer the case.
Yep.
We've had several academics within the university that have gone away and done successful spin-outs and then come back into academia later. And that's a new sort of model that's coming through. I think also the fact that entrepreneurship is much more widely seen in society now.
And more accessible, I guess. Is that fair, that it's more accessible?
Much more. And again, I'm being slightly biased towards Edinburgh here because it's not just Edinburgh.
Good, but you should be, yeah.
Edinburgh has a phenomenal support network for any staff or students that want to start up a business. They have a huge team here just tasked with doing that and offer fantastic support. I'd also flag up actually in my collaborative nature.
Good.
It's been really interesting to see what's happening over in Glasgow now.
Okay.
And I think they are getting the wind in their sails over there. Mm-hmm. They're doing a very interesting team at Strathclyde together, which is right in the central part of Edinburgh.
Yep.
Of Glasgow.
Glasgow.
Yeah. A good team there, so I think great things are going to start building out there as well.
Yeah, you're speaking to Converse there. One of our investee companies, a company called Arbon Co, has got a number of knowledge transfer partnerships with the University of Strathclyde, and they've been doing that for a number of years and extremely successfully. So it's great to see that kind of collaboration between academia and commerce.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I think I've said this to you before, it's 35 miles between Edinburgh and Glasgow. It's next door.
Yep.
So it'll all be linked up one day, and we should all be trying to get as many successful companies coming out of there.
Absolutely. And I'm sure for you guys, as long as Scotland's doing better than England, then you'll be very happy. So, yeah, it doesn't come into it, does it? I don't know whether that's just rugby and football, but anyway. Kind of going forward, what are your kind of hopes and objectives over the next year, kind of 2-3 years?
Well, so one of the other programs, which I didn't get around to, so we got the Venture Builder, which is sort of aimed at PhDs that are getting more of them to set up companies. Where we also within the base have the AI Accelerator. So those are for more mature companies that are coming through. Now, the other hubs that I mentioned there, they're right at the beginning of their journey, and we would hope to support them through their activities, not just them, but right across Scotland, if we can offer support, we would want to do that. But the talent pool is definitely here. The quality of life is definitely here. Weather might not be here. But
I was going to say, as long as you've got a good coat, you're fine. Yep.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of ingredients to make some really good stuff happen here, and the ambition really is, let's solve tomorrow's problems today with what we're doing now, and encourage companies to form and to address some of these big societal issues that we need addressing in the short term.
And big societal issues generally need collaboration. They have to be supported by they're not going to be solved by one person individually, and I think that's the key, and I think that's where organizations such as EIE are extremely powerful and extremely important, because whatever you guys do at EIE, you are key to driving that network and that supports world kind of in your area.
Well, thank you for saying so, Andrew. I mean, that is the network is should not be underestimated at all.
Absolutely.
The network effect is absolutely vital for what's going on here, and so we are very keen to build out our networks and to engage with people to help help these nascent companies grow and to scale.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that's hugely important as companies look for extra support and extra needs. Sometimes it's not, companies don't need the same need or the same support at all stages of their journey. They need to have different people coming in at different times to help them on that journey. And so that the wider the network, the wider the contacts, then the more chance that those companies have got of surviving.
It's been really nice. I mean, I'm always in awe of these people that do this. Because they work incredible hours. They give up an awful lot. A lot of them don't make it. And there's a big cost to that. But the ones that do, you know, there's lessons to be learned for everybody. And absolutely. It's that thing about giving back and giving pain forward. There's an awful lot of that goes on up here.
There is, and also I think, you know, the very nature of what you're supporting, whether that be on the life sciences side, whether that be on social changes and technologies to help social change, etc. You know, they are generally stuff that is aiming for the greater good. You know, it's you know, it is more than just that. It's just the kind of capital growth of an investment is way beyond that that people are looking for.
Yeah, I do think since lockdown, that's accelerated a bit as well.
I agree. We're certainly seeing that.
And so we are in this period of change and.
But good change, good change.
Good change.
So other than helping the companies of tomorrow and making societal change and all those highbrow kind of things, Danny, away from the office, kind of, what do you get up to? I mean, on these podcasts, we like to kind of bring the personality of people to the fore. So kind of what do you do away from the office?
Personality?
Well, you know, I'll try my best, Danny.
I try to empathise with startups as much as possible and don't have much of a life outside.
Good, that's good. I
try and keep fit, so that's one of the things. So I do try and get a swim or two in each week. I got up near the 200K swim last year, so that's the target for this year.
Brilliant.
I think it was at 180 last year, and now, so this year's target is to get 200K.
Are you on course for that?
I had a quick add up a bit earlier today, Andrew, and I think I'm on. Let's have a quick look. Yeah, I'm on 154K.
There you go. We're roughly three quarters of the year, so you should be ahead of targets. That's good. Good.
Yeah. Good. Provided we don't get more things. There's always something that gets in your way, isn't there?
Absolutely. That's life. There's always a challenge. There's always a hurdle.
It's great. I have to say. It's so important. During the lockdown, there's, you know, you've understood with not being able to do that and just swimming and stuff like that. Yep. So you do try to keep fit. But it's a wonderful thing being able to get in the pool and just switch off a bit.
But I guess also you say you empathise with entrepreneurs and you know, you spend no time with the office. But I guess part of you working with entrepreneurs is making sure they understand the importance of being able to switch off and actually recharge their batteries and things. Because what you don't want is an entrepreneur just burning out. I guess that's vitally important as well.
Yeah, and in fact, this year, as part of the readiness program, that was an area that we did address. And we, you know, basically sort of Chatham House rules, but we just had a very open discussion about that, about how you do have to look after yourself. And you have very high highs and very low lows as an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
And, you know, how you might deal with that.
Your aim is to have more highs and lows. That's the challenge, and that's the game, effectively. So the last question, the question we ask all of our guests on the Deepish Discovery podcast, is about the Deepish dinner party. So if you could invite three guests to join us, no friends or family, because we don't upset anybody, and you know, dead or alive, who would you be inviting, and briefly why?
Well, I when you did this, the one that came straight to mind, I have to say, was the Queen.
Yep.
It's out of this past. It was, I think we're all sort of a bit puzzled with our own reactions to some of this.
Absolutely.
It was quite moving, very reflective.
Yeah.
I did queue up to go and see her coffin.
Ah, very good. In Edinburgh.
In Edinburgh. Yeah. Going at 10 to 3 in the morning.
That must have been quite a special moment, though, kind of a very personal moment.
It was, as I say, it was, you know, when you've queued up for sort of 5.5 hours, it's very reflective time.
Yeah.
But, so what a life she's had. She's been there all my life.
Yep.
And so it'd be quite nice to have a chat with her about.
And the people she's met, you know, the history she's lived through. I mean, back to the war, kind of Churchill, you know. you know, 15 prime ministers, you know, the similar kind of number of presidents in the US, etc. You know, she's kind of been there, worn the T-shirt, and you know, if I know she was always very discreet, but if she was to open up, then I'm sure she's got some fascinating stories.
Yeah.
So who's next? Who's next? Who's joining the Queen?
Well, it had to be David Attenborough.
Excellent. Yep.
Multiple reasons. There was various people, but David Attenborough, you know, clearly.
Yep.
Just to hear from him directly about how much the world has changed during his lifetime and the impact we're having. And I think you may know that EIE became an official nominator for the Earthshot Prize.
Yes.
Set by the Royal Foundation. It's an area that's definitely come into focus more sharply for me in the last few years. And it would just be fascinating to hear his take on it, but also, you know, what he thinks might some of the possible solutions to where we are.
Absolutely. And I think that's, that'd be fascinating. And is there anybody now, the third person, is there anybody born after 1940 that you wanted to include in this? Or is this, you know?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. So your third one, who's next on the list?
The third one is Hedy Lamarr.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting choice.
So just because she's so interesting, because she's, you know, everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people will know Hedy Lamarr as an actress from the golden age of Hollywood.
Yep.
But the fact that she was a very tech-savvy woman that didn't really get the credit that she should have got during her lifetime, I don't think, for all the stuff that she did. I just think she would be absolutely fascinating.
Again, to hear the golden time that she was involved in as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we're all getting the benefit of some of the stuff that she came up with.
Yeah, a good, fascinating conversation. That'll be a very interesting a dinner party. I think that's three fantastic guests. So thank you for that. Danny, look, we're kind of out of time for today. I could speak to you all day about Edinburgh, the work you guys do, and you know, how we enjoy supporting you. So, but thank you for your time, and we look forward to catching up again in due course. And hopefully, you'll come back on a podcast in the future, and we'll talk further about kind of the ecosystem in the area.
I hope so too. Thanks very much, Andrew.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for this Deepish Discovery podcast. If there's any subjects or topics you'd like us to discuss in future podcasts, please email us at discovery@deepishcapital.com. This podcast was brought to you by Deepish Capital LLP. Deepish is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.